Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
It is a Tuesday. It is the 11th of June, and you are listening to Kaya Biz. We're on the street. We are on the air. We've been having a phenomenal series of conversations that we've been unpacking for you. Everything from our pockets to our hair to the influence on what we see in terms of employment, and of course, the preferences that certainly happen within certain organizations. Before we get to our next conversation, which does zone in into employment, and perhaps we can profile this under careers corner, or legally speaking, I do want us just to get some feedback on what we do see on social media regarding some of your tweets and your feedback. The likes of Wendy Isaac, my Wens, always appreciate you listening, retweeting and sharing her feedback there. At TD Malindi, also one of our regular listeners, giving us feedback on a conversation we had regarding Sal C, asking, whatever Sal C does with their stores and offering them to franchisees, I hope there will be no job losses. They got great exposure sponsoring the Comrades Marathon 2024. You're right, at TD Malindi. And if you're picking up on this conversation, essentially we spoke to a representative of distribution, sales, as well as growth at Sal C, who gave us some perspective that they aren't closing down any of their stores. In a matter of, as a matter of fact, they're actually transferring some of the corporate-owned stores to franchisees, and that might lead to certain shifts and changes within the retail outlets that we typically interact with as South Africans. So the Sal C stores. That was Chris Lazarus, the Chief Officer for Sales, Distribution and Regions at Sal C, was elaborating on that conversation. We also have a tweet here from Zugzo, at Nzukiso, saying, moreover, they're proposing that the staff be the first preference on buying franchisees. We saw this with MTN years back, and that was the context around who the franchisees would be, and of course, giving the entrepreneurs an opportunity to own some of these stores. Another post and tweet that we have is again from TD Malindi, who highlights the concerns around retrenchments and businesses going under challenging times that result in job losses. And this segues beautifully into our next conversation. The tweet reads, the courier service industry is struggling, just like what we've seen with the post office. Retrenchments are a reality of late, and insurance premiums will be affected too as more claims are recorded. So, let's do this. Let's take a look at what we do see in terms of retrenchments, the concerns that have been raised, especially by businesses who are experiencing difficult times, and what role, responsibility, rights and recourse do you have as a employee of the institution should you want to fight it? But also, what responsibility and role does the business and employer have in terms of managing the financial sustainability of the business through business rescue, and perhaps having to impose job losses and job cuts to drive that sustainability? We're going to talk about the intersection of both this evening. Let's get into it.
Careers Corner on Kaya Biz.
And for this conversation, we have two of my favorite experts who always join us on the show. Good friends, colleagues, and of course, thought leaders within their spaces to give us some insight into this conversation. We'll start off firstly by getting some clarity and context from a business point of view. What structure it is that businesses have to go through in terms of prioritizing their financial viability, being a going concern, and understanding the impact that that can have on employees. And on the other end, we'll talk about the rights according to the labor law, the regulations that work for the protection of the employees of the business to ensure that they don't necessarily get the short end of the stick when a business is going through a difficult challenge like business rescue, to such an extent that the employees are the last people to be considered in the sustainability of its operations. We start off the conversation with Gareth Creeman Cox. Gareth Creeman, who joins us from Cox Yates Partner. He's a partner there, always giving us some feedback and context around complex conversations that we have sometimes. We'll also speak to Kagiso Lebede a little later, a senior employee relations specialist, to give us the employee's perspective in this conversation. Mr. Creeman, always a pleasure to have you, sir, and thank you so much for joining us.
Good evening, Gregory, and good evening to your listeners, and thank you.
Thank you so much. We've often spoken and had conversations around companies that have gone through business rescue processes, liquidations, and I guess the processes that need to be adhered to. But I'm keen for us to understand, especially on the back of many companies like the South African Post Office and a few others in the headlines recently who have gone through these challenges, Tongaat Hewlett comes to mind. Help us understand, when a business finds itself in financial trouble and is looking for options to remain sustainable or economically viable, do they need to consider the sustainability of employment within the organization. How does that work?
It's a very important aspect. So before a company, for example, files for business rescue, there's an obligation on the board of directors where they have to take into account a reasonable belief to determine whether or not the company is financially distressed. And by financially distressed, we mean is there a reasonable likelihood that the company will be unable to pay its debts in the ensuing 6 months, or a reasonable likelihood that the company will become insolvent in the next 6 months? That's when a board must consider whether or not it needs to file a resolution for business rescue or pass a resolution advising creditors why it should not be in business rescue. And as you recall, in one of my previous statements I've made, not every company is a candidate for a business rescue. Sometimes, you know, business rescue escalates and sometimes brings to the demands of the company and forces a liquidation a lot quicker in certain sectors. In other instances, business rescue can be a phenomenal vehicle because it gives a company a breathing window, an opportunity and a moratorium over legal proceedings within which to restructure its affairs. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at a company as a whole, you need to look at where the company is bleeding, and it's a very difficult task. Be it outside of a business rescue, be it an informal workout or an informal turnaround, where you appoint a chief restructuring officer, for example, or where the board is trying to facilitate some sort of restructuring process, you need to look at a number of factors. And the factors you take into account are, what is the cost of my labor run? How many employees do I have in the business? Mm. Are they redundant? Do I need to get rid of them for operational reasons? Am I bleeding in terms of advertising costs? Is my distribution network failing? Mm-hmm. You need to look at a business holistically. You cannot isolate it to an individual aspect. And often, as we've said to many companies, when they have gone into rescue and sought our legal advice, we say to them that, you know, the company doesn't grow itself. People grow the business. Mm. So you sometimes do need employees to run it, and you need to be strategic because from a management point of view, you don't always understand, you know, the inner workings and the finer details to what, for example, you know, the salesman down there is busy doing or the boilermaker on the floor inside the factory.
Yes.
And they play an intricate part. And when you say to them, how can I do this? And often the ideas come from the floor and from the bottom up on how to do it better.
Mm. And this is intriguing because this often happens, as you say, with individuals who understand the operational efficiencies of the business and how to advance them and drive them. I'm glad that you mentioned that when a business does go into business rescue, you need to look at it holistically. And I often, I guess, many South Africans are challenged by how often this does happen, given that whenever we hear of a business rescue process, whether it's the South African Post Office or Tongaat Hulett, it always appears as though there's some form of job losses as a consequence, which often leads to a lot of challenges regarding labor unions. Help contextualize this. I'm assuming that even when a company needs to find ways of growing and stopping the bleeding, as you say, there does need to be some kind of engagement with its employees.
Can I take a step back, Google, because sure. There does need to be consultation with employees, but employees have formal rights, and you might touch on this a little bit later, but I just want to highlight a very important aspect. Employees are creditors, they fall under the definition of an affected person in a business rescue. So they have the same rights as a creditor. They can bring an application. They can put a company into business rescue, right? But there's an added power to employees, and it's only been utilized once that I have seen in the legal domain. And there's a provision underneath the Companies Act, and it's Section 31, Sub 3 of the Companies Act. In particular, it was used previously, I think, by NUMSA against a company called Woolrose Suppliers at the time. But effectively, the trade union can, through the commission and under the conditions determined by the commission, be given access to the company's financial statements for purposes of initiating a business rescue process.
Oh, wow.
It's a powerful provision because when a company says to employees, we're not doing financially well, we're financially distressed, we need to employ, you know, retrench employees, we need to go through operational requirements, etc., and we're looking at this matter as a whole. The trade union can come along and say, well, give me your annual financials. Let me look at the financial statements and do a determination. Was it because the directors were drawing out exorbitant profits and paying themselves massive bonuses and massive dividends to shareholders? The unions have the power to look one step forward before deciding on doing a business rescue. And this is where it comes down to education of rights, mm-hmm. because there's been this misunderstanding in the public domain that if a union does that, and they bring an application to put the company into business rescue, assuming that you're too late because the company's fended off the union's application to get access to the financials, And assuming they've resisted an application for a business rescue brought by a union to try save jobs and to try save the company, what often ends up happening in the market is employees turn around and they say to the union, you are the reason for my job loss. You are the reason that the company was liquidated. Mm. It's not always correct. The union may have tried to do the right thing, but it's a matter of timing. It's the same thing in the life of an employee. When you can see the financial distress, employees know it well before the time. Yes. You can see it in your own organization from the cutting back the cost. You can see it from management's behavior.
No coffee,
the signs
no
are there. Sugar. The sales are there. No coffee, no sugar. The signs are there that you're distressed. And they should be taking active steps to protect their interests. And they should start looking at the powers under the Act or at least consulting and saying, what are my rights? What can I do? And they should be speaking to the union saying, 31(3) of the Act, very clear. Maybe we need to look at the financials if they start a retrenchment process. We need to safeguard ourselves. Mm. Now, on that very point, you will remember when SAA's business rescue commenced, the practitioners over there embarked upon a retrenchment of the employees. And this matter went to the Labor Court and subsequently to the Labor Appeal Court. And it was very much an important finding because although the Labor Court doesn't rule on issues pertaining to a moratorium, so it's a protection measure and the interplay between the Companies Act vis-a-vis the Labor Relations Act, ultimately the court confirmed the position that absent a business rescue plan contemplating retrenchments, the issuing of a retrenchment notice is premature and procedurally unfair. So if a company is in business rescue, employees can say, can't retrench me until I've seen the business rescue process and the business rescue plan. But even if you've seen the plan as an employee, you need to challenge the plan and you need to look at the inner workings and determine how do you arrive at the calculation. You know, often they say to you, and more often than not, most business rescue plans are usually a winding down because of the level of the distress. And employees need to go back and look at their rights and say, the creditors are getting 4.43 cents in their end. I'm an employee. My rights are slightly staggered according to the waterfall, but this is how it affects me. What can we do better to help turn around the company? And there should be a meaningful engagement with the practitioner and with the directors at the top and management to try and facilitate a plan that will gear the company into an overdrive, into facilitating a remarkable turnaround or workout.
Yeah. This has been so educational because it really does help us understand, as you say, through knowledge, through education, through exposure, that we as employees of entities are very key stakeholders and have an opportunity to actually not only interrogate the viability, financial viability and sustainability of the organization, but also to ensure that we also have an opportunity to be protected in terms of the law. Gareth, I'm going to ask that you stay on the line for just a moment. I do want to get perspective from a labor point of view from our colleague and friend on the show, Kagiso Lebete, who's a senior employee relations specialist, just to take a look at the hand of unions, workers, and understanding the opportunity that the labor force has in this regard. So, Kagiso, as we come to you, I'm hoping that you can unmute to make sure that we can hear you clearly. Gareth has highlighted is so critical because it really helps educate and empower us as South African workers. But sometimes, I guess, the waters get muddied or there's ongoing confusion, especially in spaces where there might not be organized labor or a heightened level of understanding, even within those spaces of organized labor. And the South African Post Office comes as a particular example. I'm happy for you to share your views on this one and contextualizing the understanding, the education, and how organized and, I guess, unorganized labor might have to go about it. In other words, sectors that don't have unions.
Good afternoon, Google. Good evening to your guests and your listeners. I hope I'm quite audible.
100%, we've got you loud and clear.
Thank you very much. I think Gareth has given quite brilliant insight into the inner workings of business rescue proceedings, especially in some of the more public organizations that attract a lot of media scrutiny, and there is a lot of public attention on these inner workings. But I think one has to look at, as a starting point, when business rescue proceedings commence, the employees of the company will continue to be employed on the same terms and conditions, subject to a few exceptions. However, largely employees remain on the same terms and conditions that they've been employed on, and they remain on those terms and conditions until there is a change through the ordinary course of attrition, either through resignations or retirements, or the employees in the company, in accordance with the applicable laws, reach some sort of agreement through different terms and conditions. And this is largely where the power remains within the employees to ensure, or organized labor, to ensure that the interests of their members remain protected. The courts have also come out, Google, and indicated that employees are not just passive bystanders in the business rescue proceedings. And they've come and said that they are regarded as key participants and stakeholders in the consultations, and they can at times be given voting rights insofar as the business rescue proceedings and the decisions that the company intends taking. And this will all happen within the course and scope of consultations that the company will enter into with its employees during the business rescue proceedings.
This is so insightful, because I think it really does help us understand the power that really sits within the hands of labor. But I'm also made to understand that there are certain time frames within which labor can respond, especially where the circumstances might differ in terms of the business rescue operations or the closure of the company or seeking an understanding on the financial viability of the business. And when would these, I guess, freeze frames typically come into play where disputes might not be adequately handled until there's clarity on the financial sustainability of the business?
I think Gareth touched on the issue with regard to the moratorium that is placed on specific legal disputes that can be brought against an employer that has taken the decision to go under business rescue proceedings. And when this decision is taken and it is ultimately communicated to organized labor and or trade unions, the clock then begins running down insofar as the manner in which there is external recourse for organized labor to either consult or request pertinent information from the employer or engage external dispute resolution bodies such as the High Court. For example, the labor courts, to ensure that they're able to be provided with specific information that guides the business rescue proceedings. Because it is not only, it is not just a rubber stamping that the company has taken a decision to go under business rescue proceedings, because we've seen some employers taking the business rescue route in an attempt to shield or enter into some of these discussions with ulterior motives. So typically within a consultation period, especially when we are considering the Section 189A process, which regulates where there's an intention to enter into a mass restructuring or mass retrenchment process, typically one would have a 60-day consultation process that allows parties to effectively engage and consult on the terms of the proceedings that are to be held on behalf of the employees with organized labor where they are represented, or through elected representatives in environments where there is no organized labor.
And I think this is so important, especially, I guess, sectors like mine within the media space and many others perhaps might not have fair or adequate representation. And it often leads to a mistrust and even abuse and flouting of the rules that might take place within these spaces. I'd like to conclude the conversation, and this has really been a beautiful case study just for us to walk away, South Africans, with a much clearer understanding of the rights, roles and responsibilities, not only of business, but also of labor when a company finds itself in a financial dispute and needs to prioritize its financial sustainability, but also prioritize the care and the prior and employment of its people. And maybe, Kagiso, to close off with, if you can share, you know, just your closing remarks. Next time when we, I guess, see the headlines around a South African post office, a Tongaat Hewlett, or any other organization that might face this kind of pressure, what is it that we should be prioritizing in terms of the security and the protection of the labor force? Kagiso?
In my opinion, nothing is as important as the access to information. Access to information around the decision to go into business rescue, access to information as to the justification of the measures that are being put in place by the business rescue practitioners to try and salvage the economic situation of the company is very important. And that is when a very active role has to be played by the employees to ensure that where there is constant communication from the companies to the reasons being taken and the direction that the companies tend to take, they are able to question and further interrogate whether this information is indeed correct, and how do they then use that to ensure that they are able to better consult with the employer and also provide solutions. Because I think more often than not, organized labor and affected employees are quickly relegated to consulting for the sake of consulting, whereas they do have the resources and they do have the capacity to give adequate input to an organization to say, but we have been on the coalface and we propose that if you look at certain aspects, we could be able to reduce, for example, wastage or excess spending, which could see the company in a better light. So I think access to information is very crucial. And I think, as Gareth indicated, not many unions use the right or use the legislative provision that allows them to request information from the employer, which puts them at a disadvantage when consulting.
Definitely. Don't be relegated to just being a silent partner who is negatively affected and impacted by the consequences. Thank you for that, Kagiso. Gareth, if I can come to you, I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. And I think, again, I'd like to position the question in a similar manner. Not only should we look at the, you know, roles and responsibilities and the protection of labor, but also, I guess, a business being a going concern. And sometimes capitalism can be cruel, but sometimes capitalism can be kind, where shared value is a priority that is put in a strategic direction. Are we finding that there are more innovative solutions that business rescue practitioners are bringing to the fore that take into consideration all stakeholders and the impact that the business rescue would have on them?
Very quickly, I'd like to say I agree with a lot that Kagiso has to say. I think he's 100% right around employees in that. Just around the balancing of rights, practitioners are supposed to balance the rights of all stakeholders. Mm-hmm. That's not just the board of directors. It's employees, it's creditors, it's shareholders, it's unions. It's the whole atmosphere and the whole environment of a company. They're supposed to do a balancing exercise. And it's a difficult exercise if you don't get it right, because you've got various competing interests and rights. You've got labor on the one side, you've got creditors, you've got banks, you've got lenders. So a prudent practitioner will run the psychology of a rescue properly, and you will learn how to dance and navigate that floor very carefully and strategically. And you need someone that is 100% transparent, open with you on the information, open and transparent with employees as to what is happening in the business. And I fully agree with Kagiso's comments over there. There was a study done many years ago, and I think it was in a Russian university, if I'm not mistaken. And effectively, it goes along the lines of, it's pretty much a board game. I'll tell you about it in a few seconds. Mm-hmm. Effectively, everyone gets together in a room and you draw a card. You're either a werewolf or whatever the game was, and everyone else is a villager. And when the lights go off, the werewolves stand up and they tap a villager on the shoulder. The villager then has to leave the room. And when the lights come back on, everyone has to guess who this werewolf is. And the study came out, I think 99% of the time the werewolf would win. And the point behind it is that the informed minority will always win against the uninformed majority. And how that's relevant in a business rescue is that majority of creditors, affected persons, and employees don't do anything about their rights. They simply sit there and they look to your left and they say, Bank A has not done anything. Bank B is not exercising their rights. I'm not going to do anything because I don't want to be called out. What they don't realize is that the banks generally might be secured, or the lenders might be secured, and there's something else happening in their atmosphere different to what your rights are, and there's different competing interests. So because another creditor doesn't do something, doesn't mean that you should just take a backseat because the majority aren't. That's why you need the informed decision. You need the transparency. You need to be able to see the inner workings and make an informed decision.
100%. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation with the both of you. Thank you so much for taking the time to educate us, to guide us, and just broaden our level of scope and understanding on key themes that all of us should prioritize. Access to information, I think, is the main key driver that we walk away with from this conversation, and understanding that all stakeholders' rights, roles, and responsibilities are equal. It doesn't necessarily mean that any are relegated to the sidelines without any role and function to perform. Such a pleasure speaking to you both. Thank you so much, Gareth and Kagiso.
Thank you.
Thank you
to your listeners.
Thank you kindly. That's Gareth Creeman, who's a partner at Cox Yeats. He typically joins us on the show to help us elaborate some of the complexities around the legalities of business rescue, business liquidations, and how it is that we manage to keep operations and companies sustainable in South Africa, whether in the public sector or the private sector. And Gareth has given us clarity to fully understand the scope of the law and how it really does take aim to prioritize not only the sustainability of businesses, but all stakeholders. Director, shareholder, including labor. We were also in conversation with Kagiso Lebede, a good friend of the show as well, senior employee relations specialist there, who often guides us in fully understanding the function of labor laws in South Africa. As you can tell, we are well protected, we are well represented, and as labor in South Africa, we do need to ensure that we heighten our level of understanding, but also heighten our level of action when it comes to making sure that we get our messaging across. Whew, I'm getting excited about this conversation because this is where we learn, right? And we learn lessons from the various scenarios that we see in the country, whether it's a business rescue process in the private sector like Tongaat Hulett, which is still ongoing at the moment, or the likes of the South African Post Office also met with their own challenges. But ultimately, you prioritize labor, you prioritize capital, you prioritize the community, you prioritize the environment. There's a lot that's at stake and it does need to be kept top of mind. As I always say, business isn't boring.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.